You're listening to the Hour of the Ton. I'm William Cooper. And if you were listening last night, you know that I got it all off my chest, and you're going to hear a different kind of the Hour of the Time, ladies and gentlemen. From now on, we're going to deal with our own, the awakened, those who really care. I'm not going to fulfill the role of messenger anymore. I don't care anymore about the sheeple. I think I've done as much as I can do, and I've taken as much as I can take from the ignoramuses across this country who don't seem to know, who haven't studied the foundation principles and ideals upon which this country was based, and frankly, my dear Scarlet, don't seem to give a damn. So we're going to concentrate on doing what's good for those of us who are awake, who care, who are movers and shakers, who will do whatever it takes to change the course of history. We're going to have some fun doing it. We're going to investigate some of the erstwhile mysteries of this world. We're going to do a lot of things. And I'm going to try to give back to my family some of what they've lost during this crusade over the past whole bunch of years, trying to give so much of my time to all of those people out there who really don't care, that I have neglected the people that I should have been giving most of my time to, and that is my family and those of you who really do care. So, if you're a sheeple and you're listening to this broadcast, you can either turn off your radio and go to bed because this broadcast is no longer for you, or you can listen, and maybe over a period of time something will sink into your brain, but it won't be my fault, I guarantee you, because this broadcast is not aimed at you. I'm not going to explain anything on a basic level anymore. I'm not going to prevaricate. I'm not going to be anything like I've been before. I started off years ago being really, really nice. That didn't get me anywhere. I tried pleading. That didn't get me anywhere. I tried everything in the world. Finally, I got to the point where I just slapped them upside the head with a verbal 2x4, and that started getting some results. But I think that's worn out its welcome. I don't think we're getting the results that we need to get anymore. I think we've just about awakened those who are going to be awakened. And my study of history shows me that all through the history of the world, no more than 3-5% of any population has ever been awakened or ever taken part of anything that was necessary to save themselves, to save liberty, even to build this country, ladies and gentlemen. Our founding fathers who fought the Civil War, who were called traitors by the English king, the crown, and who built this great nation consisted of no more than 3% of the entire population of the original 13 colonies. The rest didn't care, just like the vast majority of the sheep of today don't care. Or they were Tories, solidly on the side of the king. And many of those families who were Tories then are still Tories now. You can bet your boots on that, my friends. It is true. So from now on, this is going to be a friendly broadcast aimed at friends, at people who care, at the great backbone of the world. The 3% who care. the 3% who act, the 3% who do. It's going to be a search for the truth. It's going to be some entertainment once in a while. It's going to be an investigation into things that will challenge your mind. And I'm very good at that, by the way. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, let's have some adventures of Super Oaky. Yes, folks, on the barren plains in a little town not far from Oklahoma City lives a man who has been instrumental in the search for the truth for the intelligence service of the Second Continental Army of the Republic. Around here, he's known as Super Oaky, sometimes just Oaky Doaky. But in any case, he's Oaky Doaky with me. Yeah, and you're all wondering who I'm talking about. Well, you all know him. Every one of you know him. You don't know you know him, but you know him. Big, tall, lanky-looking dude. Likes 60s music. If you didn't know better, you'd think he was a hippie when you first ran into him, but after about 5 minutes of discussion, you'll learn that he's a hardcore conservative American patriot. And would, if the need arose, give his life for liberty. Of that much, ladies and gentlemen, you can be absolutely certain. It is the truth. I can tell you that every time he has been called upon to perform, he has never asked why. He has never delayed or procrastinated. He has never come up with excuses. He has always performed. Oh, yes. David Moore, this is your life, whether you like it or not. And I'm sure I just knocked you right out of your chair. Ladies and gentlemen, today is David Moore's 41st birthday. What did I say? I just said he's 41. Oh, come on. Now you got me laughing. What is it? Oh, boy. Well, I don't know what's got into everybody around here, but anyway, from us, David, out here in the great state of Arizona, and from the entire membership of the Intelligence Service of the Second Continental Army of the Republic. Are you ready, girls? Yeah, go ahead. Give it to him.
Happy, happy birthday, baby. On a day I can't forget.
You girls, get out of here. Go on. Go on. Out. Out. Come on. Get those girls out of here. Get on out of here. We got somebody here that's really special, that really likes Dave an awful lot. You remember Dave, don't you?
Yeah.
Do you remember Dave?
Yeah.
And you remember Anna?
Yeah.
And you remember Michelle?
Yeah.
Well, what have you got for David?
I have a special song for him.
Okay.
Okay, let me see if I remember it.
Okay, go ahead, whatever one you want.
Okay.
But you gotta hurry. Dead air time on radio is really bad.
Okay. I love you, David, because, you're very nice, and I like you very much because, I mean, I didn't know it was your birthday, so I wanted to say happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, David.
Thank you, honey.
You're welcome.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, and, Michelle, have you scraped him up off the floor yet? Because if you have... He's not ready for this, I guarantee you. David, listen very carefully, because this is from Michelle to you. Just cool it, will you? I mean, there's a lot of people listening in, you know? And I'm not really sure where this is going to go, so I'm just going to nip it in the bud right here. And anyway, all of us here, and all of us everywhere, who have listened to this voice...
Under such circumstances, it is difficult to set a limit to what resistance is. In the United States, we have not lived long in a police state. At this time, we can still criticize the government in letters to the paper.
Wishes him a very happy birthday. And I hope you have a good night, too.
Everybody loves the cha-cha-cha. Little children like the cha-cha-cha. They like the cha-cha-cha. They like the cha-cha-cha. Everybody likes the cha-cha-cha. Took my baby to the hop last night, and what to my surprise, when we got there, he hit me with the moon right between the eyes. Yeah, she said she couldn't do a cha-cha-cha. sha sha sha. She said she couldn't do sha sha sha. She couldn't. No, she couldn't sha sha sha. Ooh. My baby couldn't do the sha sha sha. I told her not to worry. They play some other dance, but we sat there for an hour and a half, and we never got a chance. Well, if this song we played was the sha sha sha, if this song we played was the sha sha sha.
I love you, you love me. We're a happy family with a great big hug and a kiss from you to me. Won't you say you love me too?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. We gon' stay here till we soothe our souls. If it take all that long, one more time, come on and let the good time roll.
And now for the meat of tonight's broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, this is taken from a booklet entitled No Treason, number 6. The Constitution of No Authority by Lysander Spooner, Boston, published by the author in the year 1870. Now, I don't necessarily agree with any of the content of this, but it's another way of looking at the Constitution and what's happened to us, and I think that those out there who have some intelligence might appreciate hearing it, whether any of us agree with it or not. And I quote, "The Constitution is not binding upon posterity. Suppose an agreement were entered into in this form. We, the people of Boston, agree to maintain a fort on Governor's Island to protect ourselves and our posterity against invasion. This agreement, as an agreement, would clearly bind nobody but the people then existing. Secondly, it would assert no right, power, or disposition on their part to compel their posterity to maintain such a fort. It would only indicate that the supposed welfare of their posterity was one of the motives that induced the original parties to enter into the agreement. Where would be the end of fraud and litigation if one party could bring into court a written instrument without any signature and claim to have it enforced upon the ground that it was written for another man to sign, that this other man had promised to sign it, that he ought to have signed it, that he had had the opportunity to sign it, if he would, but that he had refused or neglected to do so. Yet that is the most that could ever be said of the Constitution. It is plain, then, that on general principles of law and reason, such principles as we all act upon in courts of justice and in common life, the Constitution is no contract, that it binds nobody and never did bind anybody, and that all those who pretend to act by its authority are really acting without any legitimate authority at all. That on general principles of law and reason, they are mere usurpers, and that everybody not only has the right, but is morally bound to treat them as such. The Constitution does not set up a perpetual corporation. It cannot be said that the Constitution formed, quote, the people of the United States, end quote, for all time into a corporation. It does not speak of the people as a corporation, but as individuals. A corporation does not describe itself as we, nor as people, nor as ourselves, nor does a corporation in legal language have any posterity. Moreover, no body of men existing at any one time have the power to create a perpetual corporation. A corporation can become practically perpetual only by the voluntary accession of new members as the old ones die off. I find this incredibly interesting, ladies and gentlemen. It's another way of looking at it that I had not ever considered before. Like I said, I don't necessarily agree with any of it. And since I have not really studied it, I don't necessarily disagree with any of it either. I don't really know. But I think that it is such an interesting proposition that it needed to be aired in our avowed goal of looking for the truth. Because you can only find the truth by really looking. It goes on. Voting does not imply supporting the Constitution. And by the way, I'm not reading the entire booklet. There's not time. I'm just quoting passages in a sort of an orderly form. And by the way, this was provided by one of our listeners in San Jose, Costa Rica. You know, some of you don't realize that we have listeners all over the world. And when I first started off, I was really broadcasting to most of the world outside the United States, not realizing that any Americans ever listened to shortwave. And hoping to get the message across that if we lose our freedom here, so goes the world. Well, let me continue here. Voting does not imply supporting the Constitution. Doubtless, the most miserable of men, under the most oppressive government in the world, if allowed the ballot, would use it, if they could see any chance of thereby ameliorating their condition. But it would not, therefore, be a legitimate inference that the government itself that crushes them was one which they had voluntarily set up, or even consented to. You see, the secret ballot makes a secret government. The secret ballot makes a secret government. And a secret government is a secret band of robbers and murderers. Open despotism is better than this. The single despot stands out in the face of all men and says, I am the state. My will is law. I am your master. I take the responsibility of my acts. The only arbiter I acknowledge is the sword. If anyone denies my right, let him try conclusions with me. But a secret government is little less than a government of assassins. Under it, a man knows not who his tyrants are until they have struck, and perhaps not then. He may guess beforehand as to some of his immediate neighbors, but since he doesn't know who they voted for, he doesn't know if they are friend or enemy. But he really knows nothing. The man to whom he would most naturally fly for protection may prove an enemy when the time of trial comes. This is the kind of government we have, and it is the only one we are likely to have until men are ready to say, we will consent to no constitution except such as one as we are neither ashamed nor afraid to sign, and we will authorize no government to do anything in our name which we are not willing to be personally responsible for. On general principles of law and reason, it cannot be said that the government has any voluntary supporters at all until it can be distinctly shown who its voluntary supporters are. You know, I got to tell you, folks, this has a distinct Freemasonic ring to it, especially the part about the benevolent despotism. That comes right out of the lodge. That's how the lodges run, as a matter of fact. No man can reasonably or legally be said to do such a thing as to assent to or support the Constitution unless he does it openly and in a way to make himself personally responsible for the acts of his agents, so long as they act within the limits of the power he delegates to them. Sounds like he was listening to this broadcast at least a couple of hours of his life. Although, since it was written in 1870, we know that unless there's some time warp that bounces radio signals into the past, that could not be so. At least, as far as we know. The payment of taxes, being compulsory, of course, furnishes no evidence that anyone voluntarily supports the Constitution. And you can say that again. Still another reason why the payment of taxes implies no consent or pledge to support the government is that the taxpayer does not know and has no means of knowing who the particular individuals are who compose the government. To him, the government is a myth, an abstraction, an incorporeality with which he can make no contract and to which he can give no consent and make no pledge. He knows it only through its pretended agents. The government itself he never sees. It is no exaggeration, but a literal truth to say that by the Constitution, not as I interpret it, but as it is interpreted by those who pretend to administer it, the properties, liberties, and lives of the entire people of the United States are surrendered unreservedly into the hands of men who, it is provided by the Constitution itself, shall never be questioned as to any disposal they make of them. Thus the Constitution, in Article 1, Section 6, provides that, quote, for any speech or debate or vote in either house, they, the senators and representatives, shall not be questioned in any other place, end quote. The whole law-making power is given to these senators and representatives when acting by a two-thirds vote, and this two-thirds vote may be but two-thirds of a quorum, that is, two-thirds of a majority instead of two-thirds of the whole. And this provision protects them from all responsibility for the laws that they make. And I gotta say, in defense of that, ladies and gentlemen, if it didn't, who would have the guts to make a law that needed to be made? You know, that's a question that should be asked there. The Constitution also enables them to secure the execution of all their laws by giving them power to withhold the salaries of and to impeach and remove all judicial and executive officers who refuse to execute them. That is extremely interesting, don't you think? So, if somebody refuses to execute their laws, thus exercising what's called a balance of power, which is the way it should be, according to all my interpretations, the Congress can just refuse to approve the budget for the next year or the funding for the next year. And if I am reading this correctly, can withhold the salaries, impeach, remove anybody who refuses to execute their laws. Now, that's an interesting proposition that I'm sure Congress really hasn't thought of. Or if they have, they've never applied that. And when they've tried, it hasn't been for the reasons stated here. It's been for supposed crimes. At least, that's what we've been told that it has been for. Am I right? Or am I off on some tangent? Thus, the whole power of the government is in their hands, meaning Congress's hands, and they are made utterly irresponsible for the use they make of it. What is this but absolute irresponsible power? It is no answer to this view of the case to say that these men are under oath to use their power only within certain limits, for what care they, or what should they care, for oaths or limits, when it is expressly provided by the Constitution itself that they shall never be questioned or held to any responsibility whatever for violating their oaths or transgressing these limits. And ladies and gentlemen, that is an excellent question, one that many of us should be asking these clowns today who claim to be representing us in a Republican form of government and really end up representing other powers. On general principles of law and reason, the oaths which these pretended agents of the people take to support the Constitution are of no validity or obligation. And why? For this, if for no other reason, that they are given to nobody. There is no privity, as the lawyers say. That is, no mutual recognition, consent, and agreement between those who take those oaths and any other person.
Lost and alone again. Don't tell me I can't handle. Oh, how many of you good people really realize what's been going on in history? I'm sure that a lot of you listen to this broadcast regularly and have quite a bit of knowledge about it. But, you know, we talk about President Roosevelt declaring the banking emergency, closed the banks for 3 days. By the way, that was just the Federal Reserve banks. No other banks were subject to that. All of this baloney you've heard about the Great Depression is one of the biggest propaganda pieces of socialism that has ever come down the pike. Designed to instill fear into the population to accept government control. And it worked. Roosevelt called in all the gold, and he had no authority to tell anybody outside the jurisdiction of the, quote, federal government, end quote, to do anything with their gold. The result is that people voluntarily surrendered it. Stupidly, I might add, but they did it. They certainly did it. And the next major step, of course, was the Treaty of Bretton Woods, which favor of the bankrupt United States. Now, do you know what I'm talking about here? You see, Roosevelt couldn't have done anything that he did in 1933, making the president a dictator, in fact, calling in the gold, destroying our monetary system, putting the Fed in charge, creating worthless money. Couldn't have done any of it, ladies and gentlemen, except for the fact that this country was bankrupt, or at least they pretended that it was bankrupt. And now they have pledged the entire resources, both human, natural, and of the wealth created by the sweat of your brow, as pledge upon payment of the national debt. And this is illegal. Absolutely illegal. You think this guy is talking about the Constitution as being an illegal contract? Doesn't have some validity? Well, it does have some validity. How can you be held responsible for a debt that you had no part in? They have your name on no contract making you a part of it. The whole thing is a scam. Everything that's going on today is a scam. And it's going to come tumbling down because anything built upon a lie, ultimately when the lie is exposed, always comes tumbling down. When you pull the foundation out from under a building, it comes tumbling down. And this entire Federal Reserve System and the economy of the United States of America is based upon a lie. And when that lie is exposed over the whole of the population, regardless of their stupidity or not, it has to come tumbling down, and it will. And that's not too far off. And we have a sponsor that can help you with that. And you owe them some loyalty anyway for bringing you the hour of the time. And that's Swiss America Trading. I suggest you call them and ask them how you can get your hands on some real money. Get some real money back in your pockets where it belongs. Because you're going to need it. Throughout the history of the world, it's the only thing that has ever maintained its value in the face of any economic emergency. Inflation, collapse, depression, war, doesn't make any difference. It has always been traded by the common people in times of need. It is always recognized as the ruler of the market whenever it exists in the market. And you better understand that if you think for 1 second that when all this comes tumbling down and the banks slam their doors, that you're going to be able to get your hands on anything that you normally deal with now, you are sorely mistaken. It's not going to happen at all. So you better have some real money. And if you're a religious person, check your Bible and see what it says about money. Get a concordance. Look up the word money See how many times it's listed in your Bible, and go through and read all those passages, and you'll find out that if you don't have any of it, the Bible is going to admonish you to get it, because you need it. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and unto God what is God's. So don't tell me that this doesn't have anything to do with you because you're of some other kingdom. As long as you're on this earth, you're under Caesar's thumb, and you better act accordingly. Call Swiss America Trading, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. You'll be glad that you did. Do it now. Excuse me, and I continue. On general principles of law and reason, the oaths which foreigners take on coming here and being naturalized, as it is called, are of no validity. They are necessarily given to nobody, because there is no open, authentic association to which they can join themselves, or to whom, as individuals, they can pledge their faith. No such association or organization as the people of the United States, having ever been formed by any open, written, authentic, or voluntary contract, there is, on general principles of law and reason, no such association or organization in existence. I wonder how many of us have ever thought of that. I have to admit, I had not. On general principles of law and reason, the oaths of soldiers, that they will serve a given number of years, that they will obey the orders of their superior officers, that they will bear true allegiance to the government, and so forth, are of no obligation. Independently of the criminality of an oath, that for a given number of years he will kill all whom he may be commanded to kill, without exercising his own judgment or conscience, as to the justice or necessity of such killing, there is this further reason why a soldier's oath is of no obligation. That like all the other oaths that have now been mentioned, it is given to nobody. To nobody. There being, in no legitimate sense, any such corporation or nation as the United States, nor consequently, in any legitimate sense, any such government as the government of the United States. A soldier's oath given to, or contract made with, such nation or government is necessarily an oath given to or a contract made with nobody. Consequently, such oath or contract can be of no obligation. If I have entrusted him as my agent with either absolute power or any power at all, and I'm not talking about the soldier. Remember, folks, I'm skipping through this. I can't read the whole thing. If I have entrusted him as my agent with either absolute power or any power at all over the persons or properties of other men than myself, I thereby necessarily make myself responsible to those other persons for any injuries he may do them so long as he acts within the limits of the power I have granted him. But no individual who may be injured in his person or property by acts of Congress can come to the individual electors and hold them responsible for these acts of their so-called agents or representatives. This fact proves that these pretended agents of the people, of everybody, are really the agents of nobody. No body of men can be said to authorize a man to act as their agent to the injury of a third person unless they do it in so open and authentic a manner as to make themselves personally responsible for his acts. None of the voters in this country appoint their political agents in any open, authentic manner or in any manner to make themselves responsible for their acts, for the ballot is secret. Therefore, these pretended agents cannot legitimately claim to be really agents. Somebody must be responsible for the acts of these pretended agents. And if they cannot show any open and authentic credentials from their principals, they cannot, in law or reason, be said to have any principles. The maxim applies here that what does not appear does not exist. If they can show no principles, they have none. It is obvious that on general principles of law and reason, there exists no such thing as a government created by or resting upon any consent, compact, or agreement of, quote, the people of the United States, end quote, with each other. That the only visible, tangible, responsible government that exists is that of a few individuals only, who act in concert and call themselves by the several names of senators, representatives, presidents, judges, marshals, treasurers, collectors, generals, colonels, captains, etc., etc. And then we have the subject of treaties. And you know, these principles in law are valid, ladies and gentlemen, absolutely valid. On general principles of law and reason, the treaties, so-called, which purport to be entered into with other nations by persons calling themselves ambassadors, secretaries, presidents, and senators of the United States, in the name and in behalf of the people of the United States, are of no validity. These so-called ambassadors, secretaries, presidents, and senators who claim to be the agents of the people of the United States for making these treaties can show no open, written, or other authentic evidence that either the whole people of the United States or any other open, avowed, responsible body of men calling themselves by that name ever authorized these pretended ambassadors and others to make treaties in the name of or binding upon any one of the people of the United States or any other open, avowed, responsible body of men calling themselves by that name ever authorized these pretended ambassadors, secretaries, and others in their name and behalf to recognize certain other persons calling themselves emperors, kings, queens, and the like as the rightful rulers, sovereigns, masters, or representatives of the different peoples whom they assume to govern, to represent, and to bind. The nations, as they are called, with whom our pretended ambassadors, secretaries, presidents, and senators profess to make treaties, are as much myths as our own. On general principles of law and reason, there are no such nations. Oh boy, this ain't gonna fly. There are... On general principles of law and reason, there are no such nations. That is to say, neither the whole people of England, for example, nor any open, avowed, responsible body of men calling themselves by that name, ever by any open, written, or other authentic contract with each other, formed themselves into any bona fide, legitimate association or organization, or authorized any king, queen, or other representative to make treaties in their name, or to bind them, either individually or as an association, by such treaties. Well, I think that could be argued, and this guy might lose on that point. Anyway, it's not going to fly, no matter. There has to be an accepted authority somewhere. Upon that, you can be sure. Whether you agree with me or not, I'm telling you, you won't win that fight. He goes on, our pretended treaties then, being made with no legitimate or bona fide nations or representatives of nations, and being made on our part by persons who have no legitimate authority to act for us, have intrinsically no more validity than a pretended treaty made by the man in the moon with the king of the Pleiades. Oh, and that cinched it. The king of the Pleiades is a Masonic tip-off, bar none. I mean, that's the seven stars on the ceiling in the lodge, and, you know... The national debt, he goes on to say, has no validity. On general principles of law and reason, debts contracted in the name of the United States or of the people of the United States are of no validity. It is utterly absurd to pretend that debts to the amount of 2,500 millions of dollars are binding upon 35 or 40 millions of people when there is not a particle of legitimate evidence, such as would be required to prove a private debt, that can be produced against any one of them, that either he or his property authorized attorney ever contracted to pay 1 cent. And this has an absolute solid basis in the law, folks. It is the law of contracts. If you didn't contract, you're not responsible. I don't care what anybody says. However, you might not get away with arguing it in our corrupted legal system here. Depends upon how you went about it. You might. Certainly, neither the whole people of the United States nor any number of them ever separately or individually contracted to pay a cent of these debts. Certainly also, neither the whole people of the United States nor any number of them ever, by any open, written, or other authentic and voluntary contract, united themselves as a firm, corporation, or association by the name of, quote, the United States, end quote, or, quote, the people of the United States, end quote, and authorized their agents to contract debts in their name. And that's true. Certainly, too, there is in existence no such firm, corporation, or association as the United States, or the people of the United States, formed by any open, written, or other authentic and voluntary contract, and having corporate property with which to pay these debts. That also is true. But one thing he did not understand was that they would do away with real money, create phony money, which you would use in exchange to buy things with that you think that you own. And in exchanging an instrument of debt for real property, you don't own anything, and that's how they really did it. So in that manner, you are responsible for the debt. You've been dealing with debt paper, phony money. And because of that, you are responsible. And that's the truth. Even though he's absolutely right here, he's talking about 1870. We live in 1995. Of that, you can be sure. How then is it possible, on any general principle of law or reason, that debts that are binding upon nobody individually can be binding upon 40 millions of people collectively, when on general and legitimate principles of law and reason, these 40 millions of people neither have nor ever had any corporate property, never made any corporate or individual contract, and neither have nor ever had any corporate existence? Well, you know, that's all changed since then, folks. The United States government is a corporation. Every state has incorporated with the United States government since then. And you're dealing in phony money, instruments of debt, which means that every time you use an instrument of debt, you go further into debt, and the property which you think you purchased with that instrument of debt really does not belong to you at all. It belongs to the state as collateral for the debt that you have created. That's why you have such things as certificates of title instead of the real title. That's why you have warrant deeds for your house instead of a patent title or a land patent or a allodial title or what they call title in allodium. Most people don't understand those things. I'm sure that most of the people listening to this broadcast, who have been listening for a long period of time, and those of you who may not have been listening for a long period of time, but have a background in having studied this, do understand it. So remember, he's talking about 1870, and we live in 1995, and there's a big difference. You see, they used real money back then. The United States of America was not a corporation. No state was a corporation at that time. Who then created these debts in the name of the United States? Why, at most, only a few persons calling themselves members of Congress, etc., who pretended to represent the people of the United States, but who really represented only a secret band of robbers and murderers. Got that right. Who wanted money to carry on the robberies and murders to which they were then engaged, and who intended to extort from the future people of the United States, by robbery and threats of murder, and real murder, if that should prove necessary, the means to pay these debts. This band of robbers and murderers who were the real principals in contracting these debts is a secret one, because its members have never entered into any open, written, avowed, or authentic contract by which they may be individually known to the world, or even to each other. Their real or pretended representatives who contracted these debts in their name were selected, if selected at all, for that purpose secretly, by secret ballot, and in a way to furnish evidence against none of the principals individually, and these principals were really known, and individually neither to their pretended representatives who contracted these debts in their behalf, nor to those who lent the money. The money, therefore, was all borrowed and lent in the dark, that is, by men who did not see each other's faces or know each other's names, who could not then and cannot now identify each other as principals in the transactions, and who consequently can prove no contract with each other. Finally, if these debts had been created for the most innocent and honest purposes, and in the most open and honest manner, by the real parties to the contracts, these parties could thereby have bound nobody but themselves, and no property but their own. They could have bound nobody that should have come after them, and no property subsequently created by or belonging to other persons. Perhaps the facts were never made more evident in any country on the globe than in our own. That these soulless blood money loan mongers are the real rulers, that they rule from the most sordid and mercenary motives, that the ostensible government, the presidents, senators, and representatives, so-called, are merely their tools, and that no ideas of or regard for justice or liberty had anything to do in inducing them to lend their money for the war. Remember, he wrote this in 1870. He's talking about the Civil War. Inasmuch as the Constitution was never signed, nor agreed to by anybody as a contract, and therefore never bound anybody, and is now binding upon nobody, and is moreover such an one as no people can ever hereafter be expected to consent to, except as they may be forced to do so at the point of the bayonet, it is perhaps of no importance what its true legal meaning as a contract is. Nevertheless, the writer thinks it proper to say that in his opinion, the Constitution is no such instrument as it has generally been assumed to be, but that by false interpretations and naked usurpations, the government has been made in practice a very widely and almost wholly different thing from what the Constitution itself purports to authorize. He has heretofore written much, and could write much more, to prove that such is the truth. But whether the Constitution really be one thing or another, this much is certain, that it has either authorized such a government as we have had, or has been powerless to prevent it. In either case, it is unfit to exist. Now that's a man writing in 1870 about a government that we perceive as existing back then as the government which we so sorely miss today. And I thought you all should hear that. It's another view. Whether it's valid remains to be seen. And before I could make any conclusion in that general area, I would have to study the entire booklet from cover to cover for many, many, many hours and delve into the books in my library, and that could take months. For that's a serious question, and anybody who deciding such a serious question had best not do it upon the spur of the moment. This should be done after a great deal of study and contemplation and understanding of both the Constitution, of our forefathers and what they were trying to do when they wrote the Constitution, and of the booklet that this man wrote in 1870. His name is Lysander Spooner, and the name of the tract that I just read is No Treason, number Roman numeral 6, The Constitution of No Authority, printed in Boston by the author in 1870. Sent to me by one of our listeners in Costa Rica. So if you can find that, study it. See what you think. Let me know. I don't have time to delve into that right now. but it is such a serious question that at some future date, I know that I will not be able to refrain from doing it. In any case, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed tonight's broadcast, and I hope you enjoy all the broadcasts that are to come, for we're not doing it for anybody other than ourselves now. And because of that, they can be much more congenial, much more interesting, much more entertaining, much more intellectual, I hope, and much more satisfying for those of us who, in my estimation, are the only ones who really matter. And throughout history, people like us have always been the only ones who really matter. Everyone else really don't even know what world they're living in. They're not awake. They're in a deep, deep slumber. And if you've ever tried to talk to someone who's sleepwalking, then you know exactly what I'm trying to tell you. We don't need to even really mess with them. And so, David, okie dokie, have a wonderful birthday. And for all of you out there, good night. And God bless each and every single one of you from my heart. Sergeant Moore, you leave that woman alone. Get away. Be nice.